Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, that show that doesn't wear white, even on tennis courts after Labor Day. We'll have to ask Mary Pat why that is a bit later. Meanwhile, tennis is on our docket this week as we just finished watching King Richard, the biographical look at Richard Williams, father of tennis legends Venus and Serena Williams. We'll follow that discussion by looking at Hive, a movie based on real events that studies the struggle of a Kosovar woman trying to earn much-needed money following her husband's disappearance during the Serbian-Kosovar War. Let's begin this week's show by heading to Compton, California, where, during the early 1990s, Richard and Oracine Williams were doing what they thought best to raise their daughters. Unless you have absolutely no interest in the sport of tennis, or you've sworn off watching television altogether, you're well familiar with the names Serena and Venus Williams. Athletes who changed the very face of the sport, the Williams sisters rank as two of the greatest tennis players of all time. But as director Reynaldo Marcus Green shows in his film King Richard, which is based on a screenplay by Zach Balin and in which both sisters are credited as executive producers, their beginnings were about as humble as you can get. King Richard, a title that refers to the sisters' father, Richard Williams, played by Will Smith, is in some ways a standard sports flick, portraying struggle, hardship, perseverance, and an eventual sense of triumph. What sets it apart, though, is the stark reality of two African-American teen girls achieving that triumph in a sport that is not just white, but traditionally achingly elitist white. Also, in portraying a man who bucks not just that tennis tradition and not just his Compton, California community, but at times his equally strong-willed wife, Oracine, played by Anjanou Ellis, King Richard doesn't shy away from portraying at least some of that character's flaws, some of which are charming, some not. And let's not forget the two young actresses, Sonia Sidney as Venus and Demi Singleton as Serena, whom we watch grow from girls into the young women who would forge their way as future champions.
Well, every few years we get an Oscar-grabbing Will Smith performance in an earnest biopic about a noble, but
Ernest is a complex figure.
Yeah, this is a very earnest movie. I mean, it starts all the way back in the early 2000s with Ali, then we had The Pursuit of Happiness, and then Concussion, and now we have King Richard. And I think in terms of the performance, because that's the thing that I think is getting the most publicity in the conversation around King Richard, I think Will Smith is fine. It is a very showy performance, and they end the movie, as biopics like this often do, with footage of the real Richard Williams. And you can definitely see that Will Smith took some liberties with the way that the man talked and carried himself. It's a much more actorly take on what the real guy was. That's all fine. But I think that this movie thinks that it's a more unforgiving portrayal of Richard Williams than it actually is, because there's a key word that you used in your intro, Dan, when you're talking about his flaws, which was some of his flaws. This movie starts out kind of making us question the morality of Richard Williams. We're supposed to question his parenting choices about whether he's pushing his two daughters too far. Is he pressuring them into essentially devoting their entire lives to something that might not have been their idea in the first place? I mean, the way that he talks about Venus and Serena's career, or as he envisions their career, it sounds like something that he kind of invented out of whole cloth. And when they were born, he said, I'm going to kind of put this onus on them. And that does kind of sit uneasy with us. There's also a moment where it seems like he's going to shoot somebody. He pulls out a gun and starts following somebody that has beat him up earlier, but he's interrupted. And then that never really comes back, that sense of menace or danger that might be lurking within him. It's kind of a weird character trait to just kind of leave dangling there. And then by the end of it, after we've sat through this, and of course, you know, he has the arguments with his wife and he makes questionable choices about how Venus Williams and then eventually Serena Williams will become tennis pros that even people in the media at the time were wondering, why is this guy doing what he's doing? I mean, at the end, it's all kind of for naught because he was right all along and all of the unorthodox coaching methods were all worth it. And so I was struggling with King Richard all the way through because I thought, how am I supposed to feel about this guy? How does the movie want me to feel about this guy? And then by the end, it just kind of simplifies it all. It sands down the edges. And then I got my answer as to why the movie took this tactic, and that's because it was produced by Venus and Serena Williams. And I'm really tired of this kind of biopic. Subjects getting to produce and essentially, I mean, I don't know how much say they had in the script of this movie, but I can't imagine it was no say.
So you think it was too much of a vanity project?
I think it was too much of a hagiography, but the movie wasn't honest enough to be a hagiography because it wanted to include all of these things about how he was kind of this dark, maybe violent-tempered person. But it doesn't – it's not honest enough about that. So I think that this is kind of a conflicted movie. I'd be curious to see what a less kind of fawning portrait of this guy might have been, because I think you've got a solid performance at the center. I think you've got a compelling and obviously important true-life sports story. I mean, let's not gloss over the achievements of Venus and Serena Williams, because the movie kind of does up until the very end. I mean, I'm surprised they're producers because they're barely in this. They're almost non-entities, those two characters. So I think there's still a great movie to be made out of their story. I just don't think that this one is it.
There were some interesting choices made here because it is going to focus almost exclusively on their early childhood development with respect to the sport. And I think that why were those choices made? Because they think that we're all familiar with the more recent history of Venus and Serena and so forth and so on. I don't know.
And maybe it's because, I mean, obviously their later careers were, I mean, they won a lot. And of course there were, I mean, we've seen them both in the news about the way that they've been treated as tennis stars by sports journalism and ESPN and that kind of thing, and even refs within the own game that I think could be used for compelling dramatic purposes. But maybe they thought, well, people just winning all the time might not be that dramatically compelling. So maybe that's why they chose to go with the earliers. That's my theory.
Well, and like you said, their father was a sort of prominent figure, and the way he was treated by the media was another part of their story throughout their ascent to superstardom. And the thing is, I mean, Serena is constantly referred to as the greatest of all times in terms of women tennis players. And with respect to her achievements, with respect to her earnings and her developing other side projects and so forth and so on. So, I mean, it's estimated that in her own right, apart from her having married the Reddit guy, that she's worth $200 million, like in her own right. And Venus may be worth, her net worth might be $100 million. And so I thought that focusing on the humble beginnings of these sisters was good for us to remember and to know about. The family history is a lot more complicated than was portrayed right in this particular film, because I think each of their parents had been married previously, had children from other relationships. I'm not even sure that these five girls lived in the same house at the same time. That's an aside. But I do think that there were layers of this, because oftentimes when people have multiple families and then they become blended families, the age difference and so forth really plays out in a very different way.
Yeah. Look, all these kinds of movies take liberties with the truth. You know, going back to the Gale Sayers story, to all the great sports stories. I mean, they
Rudy,
all fudge
yeah,
with
course,
the truth. Exactly. So, and the real history is always much more complex. So I think that
we're being too critical in that regard.
Well, I think you are, because I think that what you're looking at in this day and age, it's what most critics are doing. They're looking at this as a dramatic film that is Oscar potential. And I'm looking at it as one of your favorite genres, Mary Pat, a cheesy sports flick. I mean, it is about this character. He was a real guy. But in terms of that kind of your favorite genre, Mary Pat, it does deal with things that are a lot more harsh. There's that scene between Richard and Orsine in which she tells him off. She says, you forgot the one girl. You forgot her. I'm the one who fixed her serve. I'm the one who fixed her stance. You know, that came from me. I was the one who carried these girls when you were off doing your thing.
And that's the best scene in the movie.
It's a great scene.
And I think Ingenue Ellis is maybe the best thing in the movie.
Right.
Yeah, although Mary Pat all the way through loved the two young actresses. They were really
very
good,
too. But weren't you disappointed that Venus and Serena as characters within the cheesy movie framework were often on the sidelines to,
yeah,
to use
but
a
it was called King
phrase.
Richard.
Right, but why
not
is it
King
about this?
Serena?
I don't think that the way that they – I don't have a problem with them fudging the facts, mm-hmm. because I frankly, I don't know the facts well enough to even know if they're fudging them. But of course, you assume a big Hollywood movie with Will Smith is going to fudge the facts. I just don't think that the way he's portrayed in this movie is interesting or consistent enough to carry off this story. I also – I thought that they were going to go somewhere – compelling with just, I mean, the hierarchy and the racial divisions. This is was such a racist sport, tour, and still is. And was the way that Venus and Serena were treated and are still treated, I think maybe that movie would be too painful to sit through. I don't know. But I thought there was a little bit in there that carried me along through the middle passage. But yeah, I just think if, as a showcase for Will Smith, which is, as you said, the title King Richard implies that's what this is, I think it's just okay.
I just want to go back to fudging the facts. Like we all agree, all these kinds of sports movies or even biopics, they all fudge the truth. One particular one, we just talked about the scene with Anjanou Ellis and Will Smith, but there's a climactic tennis match. And if you go back and research, as I did, what that tennis match was, there's a moment in this match that they play out with total melodrama that wasn't even mentioned in the New York Times story of the coverage of the match. So it's like there were some decisions that I did have problems with. But overall, I give King Richard a pass simply because it was a big Hollywood movie with a big showy, as you say, earnest role by Will Smith. And, you know, that's a sure Oscar nomination.
But this is a family movie for the holidays in many respects. And so I think that we need to give it credit for that as well.
Yes, I agree. I agree. And despite our disagreements here, that was our discussion of King Richard. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcast and Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at the Kosovar film Hive. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
Did you have a nickname? And if so, can you tell me the story of how you got it?
My friend that I grew up with, her name was Dane. We did everything together. Anywhere we were happy-go-lucky, always singing, laughing, and joking. So they called us the Cackle Sisters. We were a nuisance to the other students, but we had a lot of fun.
This holiday season, whether they're near or far, honor a loved one by listening. StoryCorps invites you to take part in the Great Thanksgiving Listen. Interview someone across the table or across the country and preserve it for generations. More info at thegreatlisten.org.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed King Richard. Let's now move to Hive, a film about post-war Kosovo. The breakup of once was referred to as Yugoslavia resulted in several decades of violence affecting nearly every part of the six republics comprising it. One such conflict involved Kosovo, with struggles between the area's majority ethnic Albanians and resident Kosovar Serbs leading to the Kosovar War of 1998-1999. Though the international community eventually stepped in to stop the violence, tens of thousands of ethnic Albanians already had been displaced, thousands more were killed, and many others went missing. Hive, a film written and directed by Blair Tabasholi, and which is based on real events, takes place sometimes after the war's end. Farye, played by Yil Kagashi, is a single mother of two whose husband is among those missing, and she struggles to make ends meet. When she hatches the idea of building her own business, making and selling a traditional red pepper sauce, she faces not only reluctance on the part of her sister women villagers, but also the disdain of the village men, who consider her someone without morals for taking on what they consider a man's role. She perseveres, though, and the film's title refers not just to Farye's beekeeping, but to the growing sense of women's empowerment that she instills in her community. A Sundance Film Festival darling, Hive, as part of the festival's World Cinema Dramatic Competition, justifiably won not just Sundance's Grand Jury Prize, but also its Audience Award and Best Director honors for Bacioli.
It might be important to mention that we do have some connection with Kosovo, or as the ethnic Albanians call it, Kosova, because we did spend some time there. It's been 15 years ago, but it was closer to the post-war period. And I think that's one of the things that probably none of us, even though Dan and I were there, can appreciate fully. This war and the whole ethnic conflict and tension has not been resolved in any way. And so I think that this is still a very present issue and situation for many people living in Kosovo, because there are some things that are unresolved. There were, you know, there was an international tribunal looking at what had happened here. We had the whole thing with Slobodan Milosevic and so forth, but it's still present. The war still lives as a legacy in people. And even though we're getting into a new generation, I think that we need to have an understanding of that context. Because this is a film that's going to take place more than 20 years ago, and it focuses, in my opinion, primarily on gender roles and the role of women who were left behind as a result of this conflict. And so, as we know, with Farhe's husband goes missing, and they're trying to figure out what has happened with him and with many other of the people from the village. That's left open and uncertain and so forth. She has to hold down the fort, which includes her having to deal with her father-in-law, who lives with the family. And that in and of itself would have been a tough go, in my opinion. But this really, at the core, is a story about the resilience and persistence of this one woman, and then ultimately the women in the village as a whole, because we see them have to deal with the aftermath of trying to rebuild a society. The traditional gender roles where, Dan, as you point out, they're sort of called out by everybody with respect to they're trying to start this entrepreneurial enterprise. And I think that the performances, because a lot of the focus throughout this movie and the scenes that I remember the most are just focused on this woman and on the expressions on her face. So Hive does give us a glimpse into what was happening there. But also, I think the reason why it was an award winner is because it is sort of a slow and deliberate film that touches on all these bigger themes and still has good acting performances at its core and has sort of a specific and universal story at the same time.
Yeah, and Dan, I'm glad you brought up kind of the double meaning of that title, Hive, because that's exactly what I was thinking as I was watching this movie, because the hives of bees that she's working with are not as much of a part of the plot as I expected. It's almost like a visual metaphor that bookends the movie. It begins with her beekeeping and ends with her beekeeping, and she's mostly focused on this pepper sauce business in between. And yet we see all of these people, these women, coming together in this fiercely patriarchal and hierarchical society and pushing back against it. I didn't realize until just now that these two movies we're talking about, King Richard and Hive, have more in common than I expected in terms of how you portray real world events on screen with nuance. And I think this movie does it, because I think that in its basic parts, it sounds like it could be some kind of cheesy, empty empowerment story that Hollywood likes to tell a lot, but doesn't have any heft to it. This has real nuance to it and real subtlety to it, and a lot of it is in that central performance. And I also thought of it as almost a ghost story in a way, because this woman is haunted by so many things. I mean, she's haunted by her missing husband. She's also haunted by the possibility that he could still be alive.
Right.
And she's also haunted by just the aftermath of the war. One of the very first scenes in the movie is her combing through these what look like body bags, but they're mostly filled with either remains that aren't recognizable or
it's
rotted
pieces
clothes.
Of clothing, yeah.
Yeah, and so there's that element to it as well.
And she's looking for anything that might identify the corpse of her husband.
Any clue. And yes. She's even at one point going frame by frame through television news footage where she thinks she spots a man who has the same jacket that her husband once had. Yeah. And I also found it fascinating that within this family, especially with this very rigid father figure, her father-in-law that lives in the house and presides over it. Within this family, they would rather live with the uncertainty of this guy's whereabouts than know the truth and possibly have their hearts broken by it. And I think that is what the entire movie is about, this kind of rigid structure that's put in place where we would rather just go about living and not changing things than actually, you know, dig into what's going on here and what our feelings are. And maybe even, you know, look at the way that this society has been treating women and women that want to be entrepreneurs and want to go out and do things for themselves. So I found this really strong. And I forgot that it was based on a true story until the end when, again, we see footage of the real woman. And I thought, that's right. This was based on a true story, and how amazing that is.
Well, and I really liked the fact that it was multi-generational, especially in terms of the women's portrayals, because we have our protagonist is not getting a whole lot of cooperation until one of the women in the village, who's one of the elders, sort of steps forward and rallies the group. And then we have her dealing with her teenage daughter. So we have these multi-generational things happening here in ways that sort of reflects the larger context of the old former Yugoslavia, Kosovo as Serb and ethnic Albanian enclave, looking to the future. And so I liked that sort of parallelism that you could get here. And so I thought Hive did a really good job of introducing these topics, not hitting us over the head with them, patriarchal thing, I think it's accurate. So, you know,
They're throwing rocks through her car window. They don't even want her to, they don't want women to drive cars at all.
Right.
So
they're
up against a lot.
I think the thing I most appreciated about Hive was the idea was about changes in society and particularly in gender issues, because I was a judge of a film festival in Kosovo maybe a dozen years ago. And even then, most of the movies and the award-winning film that came out of that festival was dealing with the war, post-war, a man coming back from war, trying to reconnect with his wife, and so on and so forth. And so it'll be interesting to see where Kosovar film goes. Mary Pat and I both know Kosovar filmmakers, and so I'm hoping that it keeps progressing to something else. But as you pointed out, Mary Pat, what happened to those people was so devastating that, you know, it may take another generation for it to completely work out. At any rate, Hive is a very, very good movie, I think.
And it's at the Magic Lantern.
It's at the Magic Lantern. And that was our discussion of Hive. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and early in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed King Richard. Let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show. And we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer wherever we can find it. Until then, remember these words from Gloria Steinem. We've begun to raise daughters more like sons, but few have the courage to raise our sons more like our daughters. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.